This is a big couple of weeks if you're a football fan, and you know, I know I'm in bad territory to say some of these things, but when we start talking about these things, we start talking about goats, if you know what I mean, the greatest of all time. Now, some sports I think is pretty settled. I think basketball, that one's settled. That's obviously Michael Jordan. And what do you know what you're laughing about? It's real. It's for sure. And swimming, I think if you argue that that Michael Phelps is not the greatest swimmer of all time, you just were born, because there all we have to show you is one Olympic year, and all those, was it 9 medals in 1 year? And he was running back-to-back races, he was swimming back-to-back races. Just amazing. I think Usain Bolt is the greatest runner of all time until someone beats that, at least for the short distances. I think baseball, there's different opinions on that, and that's fine. I think football, I honestly think that it's hard to say in football. How do you say that Barry Sanders he's probably the greatest running back of all time. How do you compare positions in football? You don't play both sides of the ball, at least most don't. And so I think that's hard to say. And I think this, I think certain quarterbacks even, if they'd have had a better coach or had the benefits of some rules, that they might have, Dan Marino, I'm not a Dan Marino fan, but I think, man, if he'd had better coach, better players around him, who knows what could, and that's when you could beat people up, you know, behind the pocket. I think that there are these arguments that we can make about different things, and there's a lot of nuance in it, and now that I've got you on the hook, you New Englanders, that's the greatest of all time is an argument that was had in the Bible. Let's go to Luke chapter 22. Donnie was like, where is he going with this? Yep, that was the goal. We're not going to stay in Luke chapter 22, but we're going to start there. Luke 22, verse number 24, says, and there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. And he, Jesus, said unto them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. But ye shall not be so. But he that is greatest among you, let him be the younger, as the younger, and he that is chief, as he that doth serve. For whether is greater, he that sitteth at meat, or he that serveth? But is not he that sitteth at meat? But I am among you as he that serveth. Now that is an interesting statement that he made. I am, who is greater, he that serves or he that sits at meat? Now, in our context, we may not think the same way. Somebody said this recently, I think they were from the UK. They said one of the differences that they noticed when they came to America was that in England, you can treat your server rudely because they're probably always going to be in that same class level. Where in America, there's always, he said this way, it's almost as if everybody realizes that the person that's serving them could one day be the president of the United States. You just don't know. So the cultural context does change things. Now, in their cultural context, if you are serving at a table of a lord, well, that was your life. You probably ever weren't going to get much above that. And even then, you were never going to be a lord. You're never going to be in that position. And so, and if you were in the class of lordship, of being a master, you would never, ever stoop. That's just something you would not do. You would not stoop to serve. And so they're looking at it like, well, look, we believe that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, and he has come to set up his kingdom. And so if he has come to set up his kingdom, there's 12 of us that are walking around with him everywhere. We basically live with him for 3 years, and we're really closing in on the last couple of days, if not last couple of hours at this point. And so they're thinking, 3 years we've been with him. If he's going to set up his kingdom, who's going to be his advisors or, you know, lords that maybe rule this or that or the other thing? Well, it's going to be us. And so of us, which of us is the greatest? Because since we're not all related, we can't say, well, this is the firstborn of us. So who is the greatest? And man, can you imagine the arguments that they had? Matthew might have said, well, I was a tax collector, I'm kind of rich, I've given a lot of money. I've given way more money than all of you, probably combined. And maybe that was true, and so that might have been his argument. Maybe Peter said, well, look, I've preached, when he sent us out, I preached to a lot more people than all of you did, and frankly, a lot more people began to follow him because of what I did. And maybe somebody else said, yeah, but I performed a lot more miracles than anybody did. I cast out more demons than anybody did. And so maybe it's me. And so they had these arguments of which of them should be a kind of the greatest for whatever criteria they might have had. But then Jesus said, look, you're not even looking at it the right way. So I want us to also look at John chapter 13. Because John chapter 13, you'll see that he says some of the same things. It's almost like he brings up this discussion later on that day, or maybe the next day, when they were sitting at that Last Supper. I mean, we're not far from going out into the garden and weeping or sweating great drops of blood as he prays for them and then being led away to be crucified. We're in that context here. So John chapter 13, verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel and girded himself. And after that he poureth water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? And Jesus answered and said unto him, what I doest thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter didn't want him to wash his feet because Peter saw that cultural thing and he was saying, you should never do this and it would be a shame for me to allow you to wash my feet. Now, Jesus was also showing a picture to them. And so Peter then said, Peter said, thou shalt never wash my feet. And Jesus answered him, verse 8, if I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. So if I don't wash your feet, symbolism, you don't have any part with me. Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Clean everything then. If fellowship is at stake here, then I want to be completely clean. I don't want anything to be between me and you. And Jesus saith unto him, verse 10, he that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit. He's completely clean. And you are clean, but not all, for he knew who should betray him. Now what Jesus is picturing here is that once a person is saved, when you sin, you don't need to get re-saved. You just need to confess that sin to the Lord. That's what he was showing them here. He's saying, I don't need to wash you all over again. I just need to wash your feet. And in the picture, like we don't wash feet before we eat dinner, but what do? We wash our hands. We're washing our hands all the time. You know, we shake hands and we're like, oh, I got to wash my hands. I'll get germs or whatever. And yeah, we do that. Good idea to do. But you don't take a bath every time you're about to eat. You don't shower every time you turn around. You don't do that. And that's the picture here, is that no, it's just your feet. When you went out today, your feet got dirty. And it's true for us. When we go out in our lives, sin happens. And he knows it's going to happen. He says, you don't need to get re-saved all the time. You just need to get that cleansed from you. We still have that fellowship, but you don't have fellowship if you don't let me wash your feet. If you don't let me forgive that daily sin, then that fellowship is broken. And so that's a picture that he's showing here. And I hesitate to say it, but it's part of the passage. But verse 11, again, that he knew who should betray him. Verse 12, so after he had washed their feet and had taken his garments and was set down again, he said unto them, know ye what I have done to you? You call me Master and Lord, and say ye well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye ought also to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither is he that sent greater than he that sent him. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. He spends quite a bit of time telling them here, reiterating what he said before. You are correct. I am your master. I am your Lord. If you're going to look at it in the class system, I am up here. And was the Lord Jesus Christ not far above them? Yes, he was. And he says, if I am your master and Lord and I do these things, so should you. And he's also referencing the way they used to teach. Now, I'm not a big fan of school. It pains me every August, September when my daughters go back to school, whether it's a lady in our church that teaches them or whether it's us teaching them. I just hate that they're prisoners of books. I like books, but man, it's just sitting in classrooms is so, it's terrible. I mean, it's just terrible. I hate it. Now, some of you, Crystal over there, she's like, I love school. Well, you know, spend your life in school. That's just not for me. Sitting still and listening to somebody talk. That's why I'm a preacher, is so I don't have to sit still and listen to somebody talk. But in their day, one of the ways that you would teach, especially people that were above 13 years old, is that they would follow you, and as you would go, certainly there would be times where you would sit down and they would instruct you. But for the most part, the things that you would say to them were as you were living your life, just as he did. As he lived his life of ministry, he was discipling them. He was showing them how to live. And it made more sense than it does in our day that your life had to back up what you taught. Because they were watching your life, not just your words. Where today it's almost like a person can live as wicked as they want to, as long as what they teach in the classroom is the subject matter. But in those days, it mirrored it because it was what you were teaching. And so he is telling them, I am your master and Lord. You are supposed to go out and do what I have taught you and what I have shown you that I have done myself. And so when I'm gone and you are going to teach others, you should do as I have done to you. You are not a master and Lord over other people. You are the servant. And so you should be like me. And so the point of this message tonight is our goal is not greatness, but our goal is to be like Jesus. And that may sound like a paradox. The greatest to ever live. Well, to be like him isn't my goal greatness. No, my goal is to be like Jesus, whose goal was not greatness. His goal was to serve us. What an amazing thought. And we'll get to some of that. So if we are to imitate him, and he just showed us, and I think this is one of the best pictures of how we ought to live, what is it that he did to show us that? Well, notice again, verse 1. He said, now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them to the end. Re-emphasizing that word loved. He never stopped loving them. And he loved them ultimately. He continued to, and he loved them in a way at this time that was as great as he possibly could. He wasn't thinking, oh, you know, I'm about to be crucified, and so I need to settle down and rest tonight because the rest of the evening is going to be pretty rough. He didn't think that way at all. Or, I have loved them for the 3 years that I've spent with them, and I can kind of coast through the next few hours before I am crucified because this is going to be difficult. He didn't do that at all. He said, I need to continue to love them. And so that is something that we need to emulate in our lives. And I think about this, I think, you know, we do serve what we love. We do serve what we love. You know, somebody that really loves their car, and I'm not saying that, you know, you're obsessed with your car, but maybe you wash it all the time and you make sure it gets waxed all the time. I think it's good to treat your car well. I should treat my car better than I do. But driving up in your salt roads makes it feel pointless to wash my vehicle. But you know what I'm talking about. You love what you serve. You love sports? Well, then you're going to watch sports. I watch sports. Why? Because I love them. But I notice that you're here tonight and not sitting at home watching a game. Why? Because you've said, as much as I love sports, I have a priority in my life because I love the Lord more. And that will dictate our lives. But we need to ask ourselves, what is it that I serve most in my life? And when it comes down to two different things, if it's God and something else, who am I going to put first? Well, that's what I'm serving. That's what I'm serving in that occasion. And so he says, I love them, and so I'm going to serve them. And he did this in a very difficult time. I mean, it wasn't many hours after that he was going to sweat great drops of blood because he was so stressed. Praying for them, knowing what he was going to go through, and yet in a difficult time, he said, that's not going to stop me from serving others and thinking about others. Sometimes in our great stress, our thoughts turn inward, and we become very selfish in those times. When in reality, when we're greatly stressed, the best thing for us to do is to think outwardly, because that's what he did. And say, who do I love? Is it me or do I love others? And I need to live for others in this time. It wasn't just difficult times, times when he knew that they were going to abandon him, but he also loved difficult people. I think that Peter gets a bad rap for this. He was a good person too. He might have had some difficult times. I don't know. We pull those things out, and the writers do. But I think John really liked Peter. And I think some of the things he wrote were giving Peter a hard time, you know, like when he talks about racing Peter to the tomb and that he outran Peter. I think that he thought when he wrote this, yeah, Peter's going to read this, and those kind of things. I think there was that there. At the same time, Peter said some things that Jesus had to rebuke him for. The strongest rebukes of any of the disciples weren't towards Judas, they were towards Peter. But he loved Peter. And even though Peter here is almost rebuking Jesus, saying, don't wash my feet, Jesus lovingly explains to him, look, you don't understand everything right now, but you're going to understand later. And he also washed Judas's feet. Man, think about that. Sometimes there's people in our life where we just say, yeah, I think I'm going to pass on them. I don't really like them. I'll avoid them. We need to serve them just like we'd serve our best friend. Just like Jesus served John, he also served Judas, even though it says that he knew who would betray him. He knew that Judas wasn't completely clean. You'll see later in the passage, where we won't see tonight, but Jesus offered the sop to Judas. And I really believe what he was saying by this is, Judas, it doesn't have to be you. You can still repent. I am offering you something. Would you take it? Not just physically, but spiritually. But that's who he was. He loved them. In Luke chapter 6 and verse 27, Jesus says, but I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you. And if you do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. For he, that's God, is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful as your Father in heaven is merciful. Well, that's the truth. The lost world, well, they love those that love them. But they don't love their enemies. How is there going to be a distinction in the life of the believer if we don't love those that are difficult towards us? Well, I know how it is. You know, you're driving along and you're trying to just go in the flow of traffic. And somebody, they don't like how you're driving. You're in their way. Well, I had somebody get up behind me last night on the way here. And I mean, I was passing somebody, so I wasn't like I was passing them super slow, but I was like, I don't really want to go that much faster just to pass this person. And some guy behind me, I mean, he's flying, just flying, gets up right on me and flashes his brights. I mean, as soon as he got there, it wasn't like he waited. He got there and flashed his brights. And I'm like, look, bub, I'm not getting a ticket for you, but I'm sorry. But I just kind of thought, man, these people in Connecticut, they... And then I waved at Pastor Donnie as he drove by. No, it wasn't him. It wasn't him. I don't know who it was. I don't know who it was. But you know that traffic, how people can really get on you, right? And they're mad at you, and you're just like, what did I do? I'm just trying to get from point A to point B. Those are the people that we need to love, those people. It's amazing how people are rude here or there, and I'm like, I'm just a customer too at the same store that you are. You know, I'm not the one that was rude to you. You don't need to mistreat me, but we've all been mistreated at these places. But show those people love, because that's what Jesus did. And then notice in verse 1, now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, and then verse 3, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God. He knew exactly who he was. He knew that his hour was come. He knew that he had accomplished most of his mission.
He knew what was going to happen, and if we read in John chapter 17, and John chapter 6, that he was going to be glorified in a way that he had not yet been glorified. He was going to be lifted up on the cross, and all the glory of God was going to be shown in that. And he was going to rise from the dead. Knowing this, that all things, God had given all things into his hands, and that all authority was going to be given unto him when he rose from the dead, and he was going to have power over the devil. He knew exactly who he was. The God of the universe. That is when he rises from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel. And when I read that verse, verse 4, those two words, and laid aside, I don't know if anybody else does. If you do, you can tell me later. When I see those two words, laid aside, it almost catches me. Because it reminds me of Philippians chapter 2, and we're going to go to Philippians chapter 2. And Philippians chapter 2 tells us, shows us, of some of the things that Jesus laid aside. This is the passage that teaches us about Jesus when he left the glories of heaven to become a man. That he laid aside some of those glories. Still 100% God, but also man. And Paul, in this passage, is saying some things that I think he's setting up in the future, where in chapter 4, he says, I beseech Euodias and Syntyche, those two ladies, that basically that you get along, be in the same mind. I feel like he's setting that up here in this passage. Can you imagine that, Pastor Donnie? If I came and named two people in your church who weren't getting along for the purpose of pointing them out that they should be getting along, that's how serious God is about getting along with each other in church. And the issue is the same issue that the disciples were having. It's pride, and it's arrogance, and it's a lack of love. And so he tells them, man, whew, you talk about quiet in the room. Everybody in the church would just be like, I really don't want to be here right now. And probably also like, those ladies better get right, because this is going to get ugly if they don't. But he sets it up here. He says, if there be any consolation, chapter 2 and verse 1, if there be any comfort of love, any fellowship of the Spirit, any bowels of mercies, fulfill you my joy that you be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. Boy, this really is back at the disciples. There was a great strife among them of who should be the greatest. And this is something that's in our hearts as well, because we're sinners. That let nothing be done through that strife or vainglory, trying to build ourselves up, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. That word lowly, that phrase lowliness of mind, is the word humility. That we are to be humble, just as Jesus was humble, and he shows us that. But it says, let each esteem other better than themselves. Sometimes we skip over that, just kind of thinking, well, yeah, we know what that means. It literally means to esteem that others are better deserved than we are. That they are of a higher rank than we are. That they are the ones that we should be serving. That's the idea here. That is not a worldly concept. Not at all. This world teaches that you should not allow yourself to be a doormat. But Jesus teaches the exact opposite. That you should be the doormat. After all, he wiped the disciples' feet. And what is a doormat? It's something that you wipe your feet on. And he said, no, I will actively be that doormat, and you should do the exact same that I have done for you. Esteem others better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God. In other words, it wasn't wrong for him to think that he was equal with God, because he was God. In him dwelleth all the fullness of the Godhead bodily. That's who Jesus Christ was. And yet it said, but he made himself of no reputation. That is an unbelievable, I love that word or phrase. It literally means making yourself of no reputation was used in Greek literature of a very rich person who would take their riches, all of their riches, and place them somewhere and leave it there with the intent that they would never return to those riches. So what Jesus did was, he took the reputation of him being the Son of God, that him having all the glory that he had, and he took that and left it, never to return. Do you realize that Jesus Christ became a man for the rest of eternity? He is still a man today. He is still in a body today. That is why he said, it is expedient for you that I go away. Because if I stay here, I'm a man in one place. Yes, I'm 100% God, but I am in a body. That's what I chose to do. But if I go, I can send the Holy Spirit, and he will be with you, and he will be in you, and I can communicate to you there. But forever, we will be like him, for we shall see him as he is. When he rose from the dead and he presented himself to the disciples, he said, look, touch my side, see my hands, the same body. And he did that for you. For you. You know, we say the phrase, if I was the only person that was a sinner, Jesus would have died for me, and that's true. But I think it's also true that if Jesus had to die once for every sinner, he would have died once for every sinner. However many times that would be. Because that is who he is. The humility here is hard to grasp. Because number one, we cannot grasp the infinite nature of the greatness of our God. We cannot comprehend. When we see these documentaries or whatever of the size of the universe, it boggles your mind. It's hard to grasp that there are maybe trillions of galaxies. That's hard for me to think about. When you think about that there's billions and maybe trillions of stars within our own galaxy, it's just hard to think about the scope and the size of this, and yet God created it and is the outside of it. And if you start getting into the details of all the things necessary for life to exist, and you start getting in, you go even finer, and you start looking at your own body and what it takes for an eye to work, I don't understand that. I know I've read it, I know I've been taught it, but it's still hard to understand how God can use light through something that's 95% water, and you can comprehend things in a split second. It doesn't make any sense to me. That there's little tiny hairs in my ear, and they vibrate, and I can make distinction of noise. I don't understand that. It's so wild that God did this. He's so much bigger than us. And yet, he humbles himself to the point that he has been more humble than any human being has ever been. That God would humble himself before us. I wish I had words to really say what that is. But that's what this passage is teaching. In fact, it says in verse 7, that as he made himself of no reputation, he took upon the form of a servant. That word is not even adequate. He took upon himself the form of a slave. There were classes of servants. And he took the lowest form of a servant, became a slave, and was made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. And I think as I read this, and I think he didn't just become a man, and there are multiple reasons for doing this, but he chose to become the child of a woman without an earthly father, and therefore his entire earthly life was accused of being an illegitimate child. He chose that, knowing that. But that was nothing to him, because he cares about us. And it says that he was humbled so much that he became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. The Romans would not crucify another Roman citizen. Only would extreme criminals and those that were slaves. Those are the only people. And people that they wanted to humiliate. So yes, did they humiliate him? Well, you could say that, just as you could say that they killed him. But he also laid down his life, which means he also chose the route of ultimate humility. Not well clothed, if clothed at all. Mocked, beaten, all the rest. That's the humility that the Lord Jesus Christ shows to us. Not just as an example, but as a reflection of who he really is. That's who he is. To think that our God is a humble God is hard. It's hard. But that's who he is. I was at a large Christian organization, and it was an ambassador, if you're thinking that. And at this organization, I was meeting people, and I met this guy, and I knew that he worked there, and I knew that I'd kind of met him before, but he was one of those things, I couldn't really remember his name, and I couldn't remember what he did, and so I was talking to him about all that, and I said, so what do you do here? And he said, well, I'm kind of a glorified gopher. He said, I just kind of help people make sure they get their, you know, if they need something, I'm there to fill in the blanks. Okay. And then the next day I was eating at one of the meals, and they had a bunch of round tables. And so it's just, you sit wherever you want to sit with whoever you want to sit. And I don't know who sat there first, but I ended up sitting at the same table as him. And I noticed he had a name tag on that day, and it said his name, and under his name it said his title, and it said vice president. And I was like, oh, I feel like I was lied to. At the same time, I thought, well, it's not, he didn't really lie to me. He just downplayed, he could have came out with, I'm the vice president of this place. But he didn't. He just said, I just make sure people get what they need to get their jobs done and try to fill in where they need help. And I thought, well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. And, you know, that's probably the way we should look at ourselves, that we're not in it to try to be looked at well, but we're there to help other people to get where they need to go. And so Jesus showed us his love, and he showed us his humility. And then last, back in John chapter 13, it says that he rises from supper in verse 4 and laid aside his garments and took a towel and girded himself. And after he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them wherewith the towel wherewith he was girded. And he cometh to Simon Peter. And Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Now in this we see that he was looking for others and not for himself. He was selfless. You say, well, that's the same thing as humility. No, humility is looking at yourself differently than you look at other people. Selflessness is putting others first. It's thinking about them and serving them before I serve myself. When I was still working at the college, my wife and I were not yet married, but we were engaged at that time. Now, during those days, and it's the old school days when we were all there, Thanksgiving time was the craziest, and maybe I say the worst time of the year, because you would think, well, you get Thanksgiving off. Well, you got Thanksgiving Day off, but you still had events in the morning, and you had events in the night that many people were required to be at, whether you were in the concert or you were serving some aspect of the concert. And then you had to be back in school on Friday morning, and you had a concert Friday night and probably Saturday night, and sometimes you'd travel on Sunday with the same concert and go to some church somewhere in Charlotte. And so it was crazy, crazy busy. And so I was on staff in those times, and so I had to set up the morning activity and clean up the morning activity, and then that night I had to be there early to help with the ushering because I was in charge of the ushering, and so you had to be there early, make sure things were set up, and you had to be there late, all those kind of things, and the same for the Friday night and the Saturday night. And so very busy, and I was taking master's classes, excuse me, and I had my schedule, and it was like, these things have to happen in order, and we were going to have a Thanksgiving meal, but it was, you know, tight. We couldn't start it until maybe 1 o'clock, and then we had to be done by 4 o'clock, and so you had this tight window, and I'm like, okay, I got to go shower, and I got all these things, and so I was getting cleaned up with that morning's activity, and I was in my car, I still remember it, and Janelle called me, and she said, hey, for the meal today, we need this, and so can you go get it? And I just, and it was really, I think it was something that I would have wanted with the meal, but it doesn't really matter, and I remember thinking, I got off the phone, I wasn't upset with her, I was upset that my schedule got messed up. It was like, I have so many things that I need to do, and I probably scheduled, you know, a few minutes in there to study something, and now that was getting all thrown off. And I was like, how am I going to get all the things done that I need to get done today? And it was like the Holy Spirit stopped me and said, oh, so you can't be a servant right now because your schedule. So you're only a servant when you've scheduled that you're a servant. Well, when is that? Well, that basically comes down to like, well, maybe when I'm at church on Sundays or Wednesdays, but really I've got kind of my plans when I go to church that I need to get there by a certain time and I need to leave by a certain time so I can get all the other things done. And you know what I mean? And you put everything in these boxes that it has to be just so. And if it's not, then my life is thrown in. Well, who's in control then? Because what I learned is that to be a servant, you have to be flexible. My daughters sometimes say, oh, you need to sweep the kitchen or you need to go do this. Well, I don't want to do that. Oh, when does the servant choose what they do? Right? Like if you're an employee and you show up and, you know what, today this is what I'm going to do. That's not going to work real well. You know, I want to drive the ship today. I want to steer the ship today. I want to do this, and that's what I'm going to do, and you can't make me do anything else. You're not a servant at that point. A servant says, I'm here to do whatever, whenever, and for however long, and it doesn't matter if it's in my job description or not. The job description is I'm a servant. That's what Jesus did. I mean, think about this. He washed feet. That was the lowest servant would wash the feet. The guy that served your food was not the guy that you wanted washing your feet, right? And washing your feet happened before the food, so I don't think they had sinks to go wash your hands. You didn't want that, and you didn't want that job because the feet were dirty. I mean, I wouldn't want to wash people's feet anyway, but that was dirty. And I think about this, too. He knew that they were going to leave here and go walk around in a garden somewhere. What's the point of washing their feet when in an hour they're going to be dirty again anyway? But he said, you know what, this is what we do. And I think this is what needs to be done. And even though, here's another thought, didn't he send two disciples to go prepare for the meal? Don't you think part of the preparation was make sure there's somebody there to serve the food? I mean, you guys know what to do, right? Do I have to tell you everything? And maybe it was Peter. And maybe he could have said, hey, Peter, guess what? I said to prepare everything. We don't have anybody to wash the feet, so it's your job. Right? That kind of makes sense. You were supposed to get anything ready, and you didn't, so it's your job. But no, he didn't say that. I wonder if maybe that's some of what Peter was thinking. Like, it shouldn't be. And none of them moved a finger to do it. Why? They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't stoop there. We really don't need to be done. But Jesus said, no, these things, there's nothing below me. I've met people and I've known people that have said, well, I've been in church for this long. I shouldn't be doing that job. I should be doing this job. That's not a servant. When you're too big to do something, you are not like Jesus, who was too big to serve. Wow. You know, the blessing here is that he has sent His Spirit into our hearts to change us to be like Him. This is not an impossible task. You're here tonight and God is speaking to your heart about being a servant and about being loving and about being humble and about being selfless. He can change you just like that. And He can give you that heart. And some of it just is, Lord, open my eyes to the needs around me. I do believe, as we're told in Romans and Corinthians, that some people have the gift of service. I believe that, she can't hear me, my wife is one of those people, that she sees things that I just don't see. And that's part of her gift. And I'm sure there are others here. I've met people in all kinds of churches, and most of the time you don't know for years that that's who they are because they're serving behind the scenes, and they don't care if anybody knows about them. That's just not who they are. They're a servant. But I can learn from them, just like I can learn from a giver. And I can say, you know what? How they give is how I need to give. How they serve is how I need to serve. Lord, open my eyes to see the needs that you see so that I can glorify you. Because it's not about me, it's about you. Lord, what I want to do is point people's lives to you. And maybe the best thing for me to do is just to be like you. And God will change your heart. Maybe as God has spoken to your heart tonight about being a servant, there's changes that need to be made. Maybe your attitude when you come to church is, it's about me and where I sit and my schedule and those things, when maybe it needs to be others focused. Lord, help me to think of others, not just when I'm at church, but when I'm at church. Help me to see the needs. Maybe chairs need to be straightened. Maybe trash needs to be taken out. Maybe wood needs to be put in the furnace. Whatever it is. Lord, maybe during the week there's things that need to be done. And I have just thought, boy, I just show up on Sundays and Wednesdays or maybe just Sundays. And Lord, I need to find a way to be like you, to serve my fellow Christian. And Lord, when I'm out during the week, would you show me a way to serve those that are around me? Because Jesus didn't just serve the disciples. He served one that was lost. And Lord, I need to serve the lost because I want to point people to you. And maybe that's the best thing, is a change in your life that looks so much like Jesus that people notice. But boy, this cuts against our flesh. And it cuts against the grain of the world. It's just so different. But He is in us to change us. With your heads bowed and eyes closed, would you stand to your feet?